Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We are here next to Fresno State University in the heart of the valley. I think Fresno State really is the heart of the valley. Sits right in between the city of Fresno and the city of Clovis at the base of the Sierra Nevada Mountains on your way to Yosemite National Park. And this has been a great year for not only the podcast, but for the valley, for the economy. And I want to welcome back on from Wahoo's Tacos here in here right next to Fresno State University, Jim Veros, the only Greek in Fresno. Welcome back.
I'm sure there's some local elected officials that may have a problem with that statement, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
And I use not the only Greek, but the most famous Greek. And I use you all the time because when I go around the country and I'm in Washington, I talk about the Greek ruins. Like, you're the one who really coined the phrase for the high-speed rail around here, the Greek ruins. So I never really give you credit for it.
I'll send you an invoice.
But you're kind of our local Greek historian. You're going to be like the tour guide. You're going to be out there. Put your sandals on with a white robe and go around and
We'll throw a toga party. It'll be good. It'll be a good time. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Jim, welcome back to the show. I want to thank Wahoo's Tacos for having us on. This is our last show of the year, and it's been an unbelievable year. I want to thank all the listeners from around the world and around the country, and especially here in the Valley. But we actually made it to number 13 overall last week, thanks to all of you that are out there listening. And so I want to thank you for that. It really means a lot to me.
Yeah, no, I still get pros and con tweets against me when I interviewed you 13 months ago. So
those are all the pro ones that you're getting.
Yeah.
Don't let those make you feel good because those are just Russian bots.
That's right.
Those are Russian and Ukraine bots. That's why that's happening, okay?
I got you.
The negative ones, those are the real people out there.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay?
I got you.
I think it's the opposite.
You're sure?
Actually, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So, okay. Jim, I want to run through your top five most ridiculous stories of the year. Let's start with number five.
Number five, let's start in California. Two of them are around the same person, and that is with our illustrious new governor, Gavin Newsom. Obviously, I don't think that he was planning on getting any sort of pushback on two of these items. So they're two separate issues, but the same sort of disconnect when he made the announcement. The first one was when he came out.
Because this is, and just so for all of our audience to know, that this is Gavin Newsom, took over for Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown was governor for like my entire lifetime.
Right.
He was in four terms.
Yeah, Arnold came in for a little while. There was a little break in the middle.
He, basically he was governor when I was born and just finished being governor last year. So Gavin Newsom, like the star of San Francisco, he is the new governor. This was his first year in office. So with that primer?
Yeah, and so obviously his predecessor, Jerry Brown, did not spend a lot of time here in the Valley. That's not a secret. And I don't think that Gavin Newsom was planning on spending any time in the Valley and was expecting to be able to do whatever he wanted. And when he came out and announced that the high-speed rail project was going to be sort of what I say control-alt-deleted, was going to be reset, and they were only going to guarantee the rail from Bakersfield to Merced. Now, originally, the plan when it went out to voters was that it was going to be self-sufficient, that it was going to be going from Los Angeles to San Francisco. That's how...
And just for all listeners out there, we're like slap dab right in the middle.
And that's why it started here, because it was going to start here and then branch out. That's what made most fiscal sense, was what we were told.
Right.
And obviously, after a few years of mistakes, as they would say, or mismanagement, or whatever sort of code words they want to use to not take responsibility, the new governor came out and said that, sorry, it's not going to be that. It's going to be from Bakersfield to Merced, and then we'll see if we can get it to San Jose if it makes any sense. I think that he didn't feel that there was going to be any pushback statewide. That, yeah, there may be some crazy Republicans in the Valley that are going to keep saying stuff, but I don't have to go to the Valley anyway, so what do I care?
Right. Because of the roughly 40 million people,
right.
You take the Valley, you know, take kind of the five county region, you're 2.5
Correct.
Million people roughly. So
right.
Out of 40 million, The right. Democrats really don't care about this area too much.
And listen, I mean, the Democrats here in the state of California have a supermajority in the state Senate. They could literally change the color of the state to purple, and the Republicans could not stop him. So he really didn't think that he was going to have to explain himself. He was going to have a simple press conference, come out, say it, and then right. be on to the next thing. And then
basically, this he can't, comes out and says, congratulations, we're going to have 100 miles of high-speed rail that essentially goes from... Some people say nowhere. I don't think we like to think of ourselves
as
nowhere.
Right.
But there's just not a population center. There's no big train stations. There's
Correct.
No airports of, you know, of any magnitude. So this essentially you're going to have this, what are now, to coin your term, Greek ruins. So so everybody came out and asked, well, he thought he was going to be celebrated, but instead it looks like kind of just a big loser.
And he got pushback not only from Republicans, but there were other Democrats that came out and said, Governor, I hate to tell you this, but when we went out and got the bonding for this, we told the public that this is where the money was going to be going for this type of project. No, you need to backtrack on that.
Right.
And it was the first time that we saw the governor say, oh, I kind of messed up.
Right,
because essentially
he broke the law.
Right.
And the Trump administration came in and said,
we're taking the money away.
We're taking the money away. So he really fell into
right.
it right out of the gate.
And this is going to be an issue, and I don't need to tell you this, but to the listeners, this is going to be an ongoing issue after the election, when it's President Trump, and it's going to be just President Trump versus Gavin Newsom on this. This is going to be one of the things that Gavin Newsom is planning
right.
on going. Because he's, I'm telling you, Gavin Newsom does believe that President Trump's going to get reelected. Because he wants to run for president after President Trump is.
So you heard it here first.
Oh.
Right here first, Jim Barros.
Absolutely.
That Gavin Newsom wants to run for president in 2024.
The day after President Trump gets reelected, the committee will be open from Gavin Newsom.
Think he'll do any, like, wine cave parties?
Oh. Hey, the Getty's backed his wine operation, so believe me.
Well, because he's in the wine business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, listen, so that was the first time where...
I'm in the wine business, too, but I don't have a wine cave.
Not yet.
With like a million-dollar, like, lighting... picture or
well,
whatever
they got some nice stuff
well
here.
Wahoo's is nice
this is our wine cave it's pretty nice but no that was the first time that the governor sort of got his feet held to the fire by making some ridiculous statements.
So number four
once again back to Gavin Newsom. He makes it pretty easy for me this year, which was him coming out and us getting all this money through different propositions to fix the roads. Well, we were telling folks all throughout the last cycle that the administration up in Sacramento could reallocate the money that is going to be collected to fix the roads and do whatever they want with it. And nobody believed us.
One of my first podcasts was about the car tax and the gas tax.
Correct.
And the gas tax increase. And we were told it actually failed at the ballot box because the people were told by Jerry Brown, by Gavin Newsom, by the Democrats, we have to have this to fix the roads,
correct.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Our infrastructure is crumbling.
It's crumbling. We have to have
it. So Gavin Newsom gets in there and it is leaked out in a report that they are going to be taking the money away from Highway 99 and reallocating it to somewhere else.
Away from transportation.
Not just away from the roads, but completely away from anything to do with wheels in general. It was going to be reallocated to something else.
So this is still a work in progress because some of that money's now been pushed back into transportation, but there's still some that we don't know where they're going to take it.
Correct. It was interesting, though, that when there was the, once again, pushback, it wasn't just from the Republicans here in the Valley. Yet you actually got pushback from other Democrats saying, Governor.
Well, of course, because they wanted
right.
their overpasses and their bike lanes.
You understand that we're going to get our feet held to the fire in the next cycle because of a decision that you made. You're making us look bad again.
Right. They thought they could just sneak this out and steal the money and
right.
use it
and
for their
once again,
left-wing project.
Underestimating the public. Not, I think they still think it's a Republican versus a Democrat thing, but when you have a supermajority in Sacramento, who do you get to blame when you don't need the Republicans to pass a bill?
Right.
So, once again, you're starting to see all these factions within the Democratic Party starting to eat each other a little bit. And it's been interesting to watch because this is new ground for them.
So the lesson to be learned is when the politicians tell you that they're going to take you're going to increase your gas tax in order to fix the roads, don't believe them.
Don't believe them.
Number three,
the Armenian genocide being recognized. It was a story that we felt.
A lot of Armenians fled Armenia and Turkey, which was then Western Armenia, mm-hmm. fled here to the San Joaquin Valley. One of the big pockets is here, some in New York, some down in the Los Angeles area.
Correct. A lot of Armenians, a lot of Greeks, a lot of Assyrians were all sort of wrapped up in the brutal slaughter of the ancestors there.
We've covered it on my show. It happened twice. Mm-hmm. Right around the turn of the century, and then again right around World War I.
Right, and the burning of Smyrna obviously being a huge one too. But it was interesting where I do believe that Turkey felt that once again that they were not going to be held responsible. That this has been a story that's been in the cycle for so long. And I think a lot of us just said, hey, the United States is, you know, Congress is just never going to recognize this. And when we started hearing that, wait a minute, this might actually happen. You know, we liked it, but it was also, let's wait and see. We've heard this story before. And when you guys actually passed it, that's when the ridiculousness started.
Well, one of the reasons why that passed now is because Erdogan, who has essentially become the dictator of Turkey, which traditionally was a NATO country, There was this concept that because Turkey was NATO, because they were our ally, the United States didn't want to do anything that would jeopardize that relationship, and that's why that's been pushed off for so long. But now, with Erdogan creating all these problems, he's like reliving, he believes he's like going to rebuild the Ottoman Empire.
Correct.
And unfortunately, a lot of people in Turkey and that whole region are being harmed by his actions. So I think it made it an easy vote for the Congress to take.
And that was great to see. And it was also great to see it in the Senate, too. It was interesting also what that story led to with Erdogan in regards to other things that he's starting to do, not just with the Russians and the S-400 missiles and whatnot, but going, and I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, but to the listeners, what Turkey's doing with Libya, what he's calling on other folks to do. And it's going to be interesting in 2020 to see how the world holds Turkey responsible for their decisions.
Well, I can promise you one thing that's not going to happen in 2020 as we close out the year 2019. The problems in the Middle East are not going to be solved.
Can we just solve Turkey? Can we just work on that?
I don't think we'll even solve that.
All right,
let's hope it doesn't get any worse. All right, number two.
Number two, I'm going to go with Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn in Great Britain, thinking that going so far left was going to win him the election against Prime Minister, former Mayor of London, Boris Johnson. And it was interesting because I think people felt that with the price of standard of living in London is just through the roof, that they felt that they could sort of bring in this new sort of socialistic style of London for folks that, you know, the blue.
Well, and really been covered up by the fake news media globally, right?
Oh,
because,
sure.
Because here you have somebody who's socialist communist, you have anti-Semitic, okay? I mean, which is even more ridiculous, that gets buried. And of course, that if you would have looked at all of the stories leading up to it, they were all that, yeah, Boris Johnson, conservatives have a lead, but it looks like Corbyn's catching him. Everything's changing. This is going to be, you know, socialists are coming out. They're going to take over arguably one of the oldest rule of law countries on the globe.
You don't get older than that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was so surprising. 2019 really was a rise of anti-Semitic speech worldwide, not just here in the United States, but worldwide. And it was interesting to see someone that was so close. I mean, obviously the election wasn't close, but the Labour leader in the House of Commons being so anti-Semitic, being so anti-Israel, calling on an anti-Zionist regime to be taken in place. And you kind of start looking around going, do you really think this is what your constituents want? And if it is, isn't that more of a referendum on who you're representing? I never got behind his train of thought of why he thought that was going to resonate.
Well, look, sometimes
at all,
though, when you open up the papers every day, it reinforces what you're doing, because he was being supported by all the major news organizations in the country that either by flat out supporting him or by just not mentioning his anti-Semitism. And look, at the end of the day, what happened? They got smashed, a worst performance by Labour and the left in the UK since the 1930s, which is essentially a different time.
He could have focused just on Brexit. He could have focused on trade deals. He could have talked about any sort of economic plan that he was going to put in place, and he didn't. He thought that this would resonate, and that's a scary thought from politicians that are trying to get into office worldwide. All I have to do is speak out against Israel and attach the United States to that, and I could come to power. That's a scary train of thought that is coming this way.
And luckily it didn't happen.
It didn't happen this time, but I'm worried.
New parliament, Boris Johnson, they've now approved it. They're on track in 2020 to be out of the EU by the end of January.
Yes,
Number one.
Number one. We'll stick with the anti-Semitism a little bit here. This was colleagues of yours. I'm sure you guys get together all the time and have lunch and talk. It would be Congresswoman Omar and Congresswoman Tlaib wanting to travel to Israel.
Well, you're originally from Michigan.
I am.
So she's kind of like partly your, like I'm halftime your congressman and then Tlaib is your congresswoman too.
I will not claim that at all, that she is my congresswoman, not from where I grew up. But I will say this, when Tlaib and Omar wanted to travel to Israel this year, I thought was one of the most comical endings, comical stories that they tried to push when they said that they were going to travel to Israel. And they submitted the itinerary of what was going to happen. And Israel said, nah, we have enough crazies over here already. We don't need to be importing them from the United States. And they called a press conference. They had the whole crew there, and Israel's horrible, and the Zionists don't like us, and they're oppressive, and all this stuff. And then Israel said, you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe we should give you a chance. Why don't you go ahead and submit your itinerary? Obviously, you say that you want to visit your grandmother who's elderly. You know what? We do have a heart. Why don't you come over and visit your family? You're right. Maybe we're wrong here. They finally get what they want, but Tlaib finally gets what she wants.
This was like in August, right?
Right.
August.
She finally gets what she wants. And she goes, you know what? No, I'm not going to let you guys use this for propaganda that you're so hospitable. You know what? No, I'm not going.
So she didn't care about her grandmother after all.
So you didn't care. So Israel was correct in the very beginning that you were just trying to get over there to lambaste the Israeli government. Obviously, you're anti-Semitic. You were brought in on that sort of speech, and now you have an opportunity to see your family, and you chose politics over seeing loved ones. I'm sorry, but that's the most comical thing I heard all year.
You're right. It is related to Corbyn, right? Where you have this anti-Semitic left, and then we had all these people elected in 2018
mm-hmm.
that brought that same type of socialist, left-wing, anti-Semitic politics that we've really never seen in the United States of America that's really
right.
engulfed and inflamed the Democratic Party. I mean, it led him to, from day one, she came
Absolutely.
In and was infamous by saying, we're going to get in there and impeach the mother effer.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, this was supposed to be in the last week. It was supposed to be this somber impeachment.
No.
Everybody was wearing black and blah, blah, blah. And then it comes out that she's got like this selfie video of her going to impeach the president all happy. I mean, it's really madness that's happening right now in Washington. I think people understand that. And I think, to your point, being your number one story, it's really about the transformation of the left in this country.
And what's tough for me is that, you know, living here in California, but I do travel to Michigan quarterly to see my family, and I have some business out there. I think the center left from the Midwest, what I always call John Cougar Mellencamp Democrats, you know, the salt of the earth folks from the 60s and 70s and 80s, the party that is now taking over is not that party. And it starts with the anti-Semitic speaking. And I don't understand why it's being socially allowed. Because when a conservative speaker wants to come to a college campus, they are ran off by hate speech. But even here in the Valley, how many anti-Semitic speakers have we had here in the Valley over the last 18 months? We've had a couple. And I don't understand why it's being allowed.
Right. It's being normalized.
Very normalized.
And the other thing that's being normalized, just to finish up here, that is, I think, emblematic of this transformation of the left, is we've actually seen, I think one or two of the squad members actually came here into the Valley,
mm-hmm.
right? And they've been doing recruitment against longtime sitting conservative Democrat that's been around for a long time. And they've recruited like an extreme left-wing candidate here that's challenging that Democrat in the primary.
It's interesting to see how the recruitment's going in the Valley in regards to the extreme left. And you always take a look at, even if you're running for city council, who is the one that is giving money? Who is the one that wants to see you in power? Who are your supporters? Because you're always going to be judged
by... And what it is, as I understand it, it's there's left-wing money from all over the country is
right.
coming in to take a Democrat who's only conservative in the sense of that pro-agriculture and, you know, pro-the economy, but
right.
left-wing on everything else, whether, you know, kind of checks every single box
right.
on abortion, on gun rights, on whatever that may be. Kind of your traditional...
Right.
liberal Democrat that represents an agricultural area, which they're running out of those. And they're in recruiting kind of this kind of somebody who's a little extreme. And that money's coming in from everywhere, as I understand it.
You're seeing it a little bit in regards to that race, but I think you're starting to see it Valley and statewide in regards to folks that are calling themselves progressive. But it's really where the money's coming in is that they're not happy with center-left candidates anymore. If you have been a part of the establishment, even if you've been successful, even if you've always supported Democratic values and Democratic causes, that's not enough. That pendulum is swinging so far left, especially for the electeds here, that it's making them talk about things they don't want to talk about, or they have to come out against things that they've never had to come out against for, like Israel. You know, I mean, it goes back to how far left are you going to allow this party to go, knowing that you have to go to the Rust Belt swing states, knowing that you have to go to Indiana, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin. The stuff that flies here is not going to fly there. So if you want President Trump for a second term, Democrats, that's not the way to do it. So
Jim Verros, your top five most interesting stories of the year to close out our year, and I think gives us a little bit of a look into next year and what's going to happen. Big elections are coming up in 2020.
And I have a favor to ask you.
Right here, live on the Devin News podcast.
I have a favor to ask you. The next time you see Congressman Jim Jordan, I need you to ask him something.
Well, he was on the show just a few weeks ago.
Okay, next time you talk to him, right? Does he own a sport coat? I know he's from the state from down south. And I'm sure the Buckeye State could show him.
He answered that question on my podcast.
I didn't hear it.
He answered the question. So he said that he's a wrestler.
Uh-huh.
And he feels like that when he's trying to like make his points and move his arms around,
right,
it restricts him too much and he gets too hot. So he wants to take it off. It makes it easier for him to work.
He's a Buckeye, so one, sorry.
That's a Michigan-Ohio thing,
right? You need to help him out. Because like when you're on television, hey, you suit up. You look nice. Jordan got out there and he looks like a, you know, looks like a math teacher. All right? Like, we need him to wear a suit. Can you please work on that for
me? I'll work on it.
That's all I'm asking.
In the new year. Jim, thanks a lot for being on. We're going to get something to eat here at Wahoo's Tacos. I want to thank them for allowing us to do our podcast here again. And once again, I want to thank all of our listeners for such a great year. Steve Bryant, thank you so much. Our local producer here that helps produce the show. Thank you to all of you. Have a great new year. Stay safe. It's Devin Nunes. We'll catch you in the new year.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all.
First trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard working family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith.
Afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
We
declaring a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days, 'cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.